Yep, I do too.
Good morning, everyone. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, April 14th, 2015. We have kind of a light audience today, so this should move along pretty rapidly. First item on our agenda is please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you, everyone, for being here. We do have a packed agenda today, so we will try to move through it as expeditiously as possible. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. I should let you all know we've got three requests to speak, but they want to speak to specific items and have agreed to hold their comments until we get to that item on the agenda. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board about anything this morning on today's agenda? And seeing no one moving toward the microphone, we'll move on to additional items. Our first item is discussion and consideration of support for the Ames Municipal Airport Hangar and Terminal Project Revitalization. And we have Dan Culhane of the AEDC and Dean Hunsicker of the AEDC here to speak with us this morning. Gentlemen, welcome.
Welcome.
Yeah. Morning.
Morning.
Oh, good. Okay. I have
it. Thank you, sir. Good, Dan. Thanks. Good.
Well, good morning. Thank you for your time and consideration today. I've got a few additional handouts here as well if anyone in your audience is interested. Mr. Hunsicker and I are here this morning really representing the Ames Economic Development Commission relative to expansion and what we classify as modernization of the Ames Municipal Airport. There is a kind of a two-part project here that you'll see on the handout that I provided to you. The project that we are advocating this morning is the red box, if you will, which is a 12,000 square foot short-term storage hangar at the Ames Municipal Airport. The blue box next to it is titled the Terminal Building. Is a new terminal that will be constructed by the city of Ames. If you look to the left there, or more further up on your page, you'll see a yellow box that says future expansion. That's actually the current location of the Ames Airport Terminal Building. And, you know, most of our meetings have been one-on-one as we've made solicitations. This is our first public presentation, but I have to use this term. We think the current terminal facility is unremarkable. It's outlived its useful purpose.
Would you repeat that again?
No.
Unremarkable. That's a new term. We usually don't hear that.
Yeah, it really is unremarkable. It's outlived its purpose and its usefulness. And, I think if you're flying into Ames and Central Iowa, Story County, whatever it might be, you may or may not have an impression of what you might find. And I think we somewhat underwhelm folks as corporate aircraft and a number of aircraft come into the Ames Airport to conduct business at the Research Park, to conduct business at DuPont. It's a new facility here in Nevada, Lincoln Way Energy. We know that American Packaging in Story City has a corporate aircraft, not for their Story City location, but for their parent location, 3M, Danfoss, BASF, the university, Big 12 Athletics. There's a number of aircraft that you might not think come into the Ames Airport, but if you're interested, you can go to flightaware.com, and you'll see the amount of traffic that routinely is moving through the Ames Municipal Airport. Our request this morning, I'll get right to it since you do have a full agenda, we have been charged with raising the money to build this hangar. And in turn, this hangar will be gifted or granted to the city of Ames. In turn, they will build the new terminal facility. So one does not work without the other, and we've been charged with raising around $700,000 to build this roughly 12,000-square-foot hangar. Now, this hangar is really for the purpose of aircraft that come in. They can't be tied down overnight outside. Most of these corporate craft need to be pulled indoors. So more often than not, a lot of business that occurs airport-related ends up flying into Des Moines and then coming up to the university, to the research park, or any of the number of companies that I mentioned. And so the goal is to generate a facility where people can pull those aircraft indoors.
Actually, we should say, that, I don't know whether this works or not. Is it working?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The initiative is, this is joint. It's between Iowa State University and the private sector in Ames. And the charge was from the city, if you could, if you will build this,
right,
then we will go ahead with the administration building.
And so, Dean, you took me right where I wanted to go, and thank you. Talk to us. So this is a partnership for the hangar. The partnership is between Iowa State University and the AEDC.
Right.
And I would imagine Iowa State University has skin in the game, and they've asked the AEDC to go generate some funds to have skin in the game as well.
That's exactly right. And the plan right now, we're dealing with Sukup Manufacturing, which you're all probably aware of. It's a local, not local, but it's an Iowa company for the hangar. The plan is we've got to go through the FAA to get some approvals. So now it looks like it may not start until about July or August. Hopefully then the hangar would be completed this year, 2015. The administration building will be started this fall, according to the city, which would complete it about April of 2016.
And the city, if I'm not mistaken, has approved the funds to do the terminal, but it's contingent upon this hangar getting done.
We have to provide the hangar. We're going to build the hangar and give it to the city. That's what it boils down to. That's our part of the deal. Their part of the deal is they'll build the administration building. And they've got money in their CIP for that already. So the other thing that will happen here is we'll also go out for an RFP for a new fixed base operator on the airport site. So everything is going to change mm-hmm. one step up.
Well, and Dan, I heard you mention the entities that already utilize the airport and are in need of improved service in order to continue using it. I would imagine this would be a large component to what you're talking about doing just west of here with the research park. I know that the AEDC has been involved in that with Iowa State University, and speak to that a little bit for us.
No doubt about it. With the expansion of the research park, an additional roughly 200 acres, and President Leith's vision to expand the research park, we could have up to 7 new buildings under construction this year in the research park. The one that's most visible right now is probably Boehringer Ingelheim, the animal vaccine company. They're building 50,000 square feet. It's a roughly $22 million investment. And while Boehringer Ingelheim does not have a lot of airport traffic, they do have several planes, several craft that do come in from time to time from St. Joe, Missouri, and from their U.S. headquarters in Connecticut. And so we envision that the proximity of the airport to the research park is critically important. It's even more important if we've got modernized facilities that are user-friendly and represent our marketplace the way they should. And so that's what this is really about. It's about it's another front door to our market as people come to the marketplace.
And one other step, the Ames Foundation is their depository for funds. And as a result of using them, they'll charge us 2% of what we put in there. That 2%, they will then turn around and reinvest in beautification of the airport itself. So that gives you the complete project.
So multiple entities with skin in the game. And can you talk me through the rough dollars? Dan, I think I heard you say that the AEDC's charge in this and why you guys are here today is there's $700,000 that the AEDC has been charged with raising. Does Iowa State have a similar amount all said and done as part of the hangar?
Yeah, Iowa State has a number of things going on. I'm not sure I can relate everything to you, but a part of it is they have an existing hangar now that does provide for space where an aircraft can be maintained as well as radio work and so on. That doesn't exist other than the fact that they own it. And they're making some agreements with Iowa State, or Iowa State's making some agreements with the city, which will be the new fixed base operator, in exchange for their hangar use on some different. And we're not privileged to all that. I'm not sure.
But there's some synergies there between Iowa State and getting this hang. And then the city of Ames, you mentioned it's in the CIP. Dan, do you have any idea what the dollar figure is that the city of Ames put in their CIP for the terminal building?
Currently, they're at 1.7, but the budget is 2.4 million. So I think in the next budget cycle, they'll be providing additional funding to that. Right now, the preliminary budget for the terminal is $2.4 million.
So we're talking about a project all in that's somewhere close to $3.5 million by the time
Correct.
You include the hangar and the terminal and everything that's being done.
Right.
Okay.
We've committed to $100,000 as an organization. This is a high priority. This is a direct economic development priority for the Ames Economic Development Commission. And we've got one other company that's committed to that. And candidly, we're asking you to give consideration to matching our commitment to this project with a $100,000 investment.
Outstanding. So ADC's kicking in $100. You've got another company that's kicking in $100.
Correct.
You're asking us for $100. Does that all have to be at once? Can that be split up over a couple years? How does it matter?
We can carry some of it for a period of time, but yeah, if you needed to break it up over 2 years, that would probably work. We're in the business of raising money for this project, and so we're quick to offer terms if we can close the gap.
So we've
talked to a number of our private sector companies, and they've said, hey, we can do something now and something January 1, and we're open to that. So we will give full consideration to those who are willing to give us consideration.
And if you would, can you tell us about where you stand on the road to 700,000 at this point?
Yes, we're at roughly 450 right now. We've been at this a couple weeks. So we feel reasonably good about this. It isn't a matter of we sure hope it gets done. This will get done. We've committed to this because this is important. And so we will continue to kick stones until we get to our number. But yeah, we feel reasonably good about it at this point in time.
Outstanding. Thank you very much. Wayne, Paul, question?
Not so much of a question, more of a comment. And let me just say that, this is an exciting project and prospect for this particular airport. I remember when President Leith first came on board, and I was there when he was introduced to the ISU community and the Ames community. One of his visions was the collaboration between the university, the city, the private industry, and for the first time I heard the term county utilized coming from ISU president, realizing that we all had a lot to gain from economic development opportunities and further growth and development. And that was the beginning of a new way for us to, as a county, to take a look at how can we partner with the various entities that were doing great things that is going to not only attract quality type business opportunities for us, but along with growth and development, it's going to add to the tax base, which, as we know, when it comes to paying for needed services, you've got to have, the revenue to basically be able to do that. And so this is really exciting. And, of course, I remember some years ago, and maybe it looks like this is not going to happen, but there was talk years ago about the runway itself not being long enough to accommodate larger planes and so forth. And because of the FAA rulings and the developments further south, that seemed to go out the window. But what I'm hearing you say now with the corporate jets and all of the different things that are coming in and are using the current facilities now, this upgrade will just enhance the entire facility and will give us more flexibility to do some other things than what we're currently doing right now. So from one standpoint, Rick, I'm excited about having the county being asked to partner in this endeavor. My issue and my preference would be, yes, I think we should step up to the plate. Since it's a non-budgeted item, I would be more interested in trying to look at a two-year commitment rather than a single year, as we kind of move forward. But that's just kind of where I'm at this point.
Yeah, well, I appreciate those thoughts, Wayne. I think you're right on the money. Paul, questions?
I think it's a worthwhile project. I know it's something that's been talked about for a number of years. I think they've made some improvements to the runway. I remember that project was several years ago, but the terminal itself, the administration building, has been it's been a topic of discussion for a long time, and it will serve everybody in Story County. I think it's going to be a driver for economic development. If corporations are coming here and they want to have an airport to be able to use for their private jet, I mean, I think that's going to make a difference. And my question or my comment would be like with Wayne. I would prefer a two-year commitment, but in my question is, where's the appropriate funding source?
For that? And so let me tell you my thoughts on that as I've explored this. First of all, I agree with you guys. I think budgetarily really tough to pallet in any one fiscal year. I believe that if we were to commit to the 100,000 and we could split it into 50. With 50 coming almost immediately yet in FY15 and another 50 coming after we collect initial taxes, so by the end of October in the next fiscal year, but by October of 2015, if that's palatable to the AEDC, that we could do it out of local option sales tax for FY15. We have the dollars there and available, unencumbered. And then for FY16, we don't have a clear spot, but between local option sales tax, which we budgeted revenues really conservatively, and our economic development funds, I'm confident that we can find the 50. And from a cash flow perspective, if we wait until initial taxes are collected in October, we can make all that work without too much issue. So as a proposal for talking about, that's what I'm throwing out there.
So and I appreciate you looking at those two entities. And obviously the current year with the lost revenues is certainly funds. This would be there. When we talk about our contribution to economic development, over the last year or two, we have began to move that up as we've seen projects that we feel that we want to commit to. Now, when you say October, I thought I heard you say 16, but then you use 15.
I'm sorry.
Then
fiscal
you use 15.
Yeah, fiscal year 16, which includes October of 2015.
15, okay.
So we start the fiscal year as of July 1st.
Right.
And all I would want is that we have the ability to cash flow this thing, which means to me wait until a commitment of the end of October to get that second 50 there if we were to go that route.
And so may I ask the question, and Lisa's here, so basically we would not necessarily be using ending fund balance dollars at this point if we consider these two options.
We would be taking our loss, Lisa. We'd be taking our loss. I think we're at $135,000 remaining in lost for this year.
Correct.
But then that will take us to a negative projection for next year.
Right.
Now, that said, we did budget fairly conservatively on lost revenues for next year. Lisa, go.
I was waiting for her to make faces when we were talking about
it. She didn't sigh. She didn't hit her head against the wall. It tells me we were on the right track.
When we put the budget together for the local option sales tax revenues, we based it on what we get in August from the state saying this is what your 93-95% of your local option sales tax is. By the time we get into the budget process, we've gotten the reconciliation payment, which this past year was over $300,000,
right,
which brought our re-estimated local option sales tax dollars up. You're exactly right, Rick, mainly because I gave you the numbers yesterday.
That's right.
That for what we've committed in 15, what we're paying out of 15, we were going to have a carryover of $135,000. So, yeah, Wayne, to answer your question, it was committed fund or assigned funds because that's what it's assigned for is local option sales tax use. By using this $50,000, that leaves us $85,000 this year in carryover, which obviously affects next year's ending fund balance in the local option sales tax general county betterment. In 16 or in the middle of 16 when we start putting the 17 budget together, we'll have a better number because in November we will have gotten the reconciliation payment.
Right. But the example is this year all in, I think, local option sales tax to Story County was somewhere in the 2.25.
2.28
mm-hmm. million, and we budgeted just over 2 million for FY16.
Yeah.
So if we're close, there's an extra couple hundred thousand if next year is a similar year to this year in terms of
yes.
total dollars.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
So that's how I'm doing the math
okay.
to get there.
Right. Okay. Good. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Lisa.
Okay.
So other questions, or if there's a motion along those lines, that would be outstanding.
Mr. Chair, obviously this is not normally the protocol, I think, but when you take a look at this, we do have a quite a nice audience here and so forth. I'm wondering, is it appropriate to see if there's any comments from members of the audience, either for or against, whether this is something we should be taking a look at? I'm just wanted to
sure.
ask your thoughts.
Wayne, I think anytime
we can have the public weigh in, we are talking about taxpayer dollars, how we look at it. I think it's a very worthwhile project, but I'd also want to give the public an opportunity to weigh in if they wanted to.
Absolutely. And so I'll open that up. If there's anybody who wishes to address this here today, please come on up, introduce yourself, and give us your thoughts. Don't be shy. Okay. Oh, here comes Margaret Janes.
Okay. I just have one question. Margaret Janes, Environmental Health Department Director. I was of the understanding that we could not increase expenditures for a budget that has been publicly passed and approved. So does this not change those numbers?
It doesn't change the numbers.
No.
Okay. It's within the local option sales tax dollars.
Okay.
Right.
So it's money that's already been budgeted.
Okay, so you right. earmarked
no,
that money?
No,
amended.
Amended. Yeah. Amended.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Right. Right, because of what's been received and so forth, yeah.
Any other questions right. or comments?
Well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, seeing none. Board, I turn to you for action.
Okay. Well, first of all, I would support move approval of the request. I think this is a great example of the partnership, the city, the county, the university, and the private sector for this airport expansion that I think will have tremendous benefit countywide. It would be 2 years for 50, it would be 50,000 this year with the understanding that the other 50,000, which would bring us to a total of 100,000, committed towards this project.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Thuth.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes 50,000 before July 1st of this year and then another 50 coming by the end of October. In 2015, if that all works.
It works. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys coming over today.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate your work on this.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you both.
Have a great day.
I'll get my pilot's license.
I'm sure you're going to have to name some.
Clear the skies. Next item is Story County Citizen of the Year. I'm listed, but it's really Leanne Harder who's talking us through this, and I understand we've got a scheduling change, but let's talk a little bit about what's happening here.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
With the celebration that we have going on through the month of April for National County Government Month, I'm really pleased to share the introduction of a new program, the Story County Citizen of the Year program, Citizen of the Year Award. It's something that the board will do annually to recognize residents of Story County who perform meritorious service above and beyond what is normally expected of a citizen. Efforts demonstrate creativity, vision, leadership, and citizenship by providing service to programs and activities that overall positively impact the welfare of all the citizens of Story County. They do that either through their regular job, vocation, or through volunteer service as a mayor, city council member, whatever that may be, or a combination of both. This next week will be the inaugural presentation of two deserving individuals. And it's a surprise for those two individuals, so I cannot name them today. But I think once the presentations are given, everyone will agree that our inaugural presentations are pretty amazing. It will be next Tuesday, April 21st.
You all want to be here for that, next Tuesday.
And these two individuals exemplify the description I read of the program. And I'm looking forward to next Tuesday. And as Mr. Sanders said, we had a little scheduling. When you're trying to surprise individuals, you have to get creative and getting them to attend Board of Supervisors meetings. I hope I didn't give anything out.
No. Thank you.
Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you. And thank you for your work on this. And again, this is, put a shout out for our, county government month. We're doing some exciting things about trying to, educate our citizenry about, how counties work. We're hearing some exciting results in our schools and the collaboration that is taking place with our youth. And so hopefully this will build from year to year on the different type of activities that we could use during this month. Okay.
Outstanding. All right. Moving on to agency reports, always a highlight for us here in the Board of Supervisors when we get to see legal aid. We've got as fine of legal aid as anywhere in the state of Iowa. And Tara, thank you so much for coming to present to us today.
Well, thank you all. This is one of the presentations to which I look most forward during the year, because I think we have such a great partnership with the county, and I feel every time that I come that I'm among not just friends here on the board, but really everyone in this room is a contributor to our organization in some way, and that's so significant and important to us. You have in front of you kind of a turquoise report to you, and that's maybe more lengthy than anything that we've prepared for you before, but I wanted to give you a full summary of what we've been doing and what's been going on in the organization. So you have some background information there about the attorneys that are working in the office. There has been no change in our staff since last year, with the exception of a receptionist change, but other than that, everyone is the same, so we've got the same folks. Our big staff update for you is that our junior staff attorney, Erin Schneider, had a baby back in December and took about 10 weeks off for maternity leave. She is back and up and running, building her caseload back up. All of us have breathed a huge sigh of relief. Having her back in the office is huge. The lead up to a maternity leave and then the building back out of it is a challenge, and we've done that a number of times in the organization, whether it's been for a maternity leave or for a health-related issue or something like that. But that always leaves everyone a little bit winded. So that's what we've got going on staff-wise. We do actually have a receptionist position open right now, but we're working in partnership with Experience Works, which is a federally funded organization out of Fort Dodge. They're actually working to place a receptionist with us. That's an organization that finds work and opportunities for people 55 and older. So we've just met with them, and we're hoping that that'll end up being a nice placement for us. And then we also have the position posted publicly as well. So if we find somebody who can serve in that role long term, or maybe job share with the Experience Works person, that's what our plan is going to be. I really want to be able to give you an update that's up to the minute, and so I can do that with respect to our funding for you have information on fiscal year 13-14 in that turquoise page, but as far as 14-15 goes, we have 1,518.67 hours that are funded, that are budgeted to be funded by Story County. We have drawn down the funds for 1,441 of those hours, leaving us with very few hours that we still will be billing to the county. So our drawdown is 94.95% as of the end of March, which is amazing. We're pleased with that. That's not an unusual pattern for us. We do tend to draw down most of the funds by typically the end of April, but we're even a little ahead of schedule. We have similar drawdown rates, actually, for the City of Ames and the Government of the Student Body, and we've drawn down all of our local option funds already. I think those were drawn down by the end of February. So that's going great. Just to give you a little bit more information on what's been going on in 14-15, through the end of December 14, we had about a little over 3,000 attorney hours worked. We had worked on 340 cases during the fiscal year that at that point. We were averaging, it's a little bit lower than you'll see in the turquoise report that you have, but we were averaging just under 9 hours per case. And that fluctuates all over the place, depending on just one case that sort of blows that up. Mm-hmm. But we're always happy when it's under 10. We feel like that's good value for our funders. So we're very excited about that. We, our board is taking on a new board development project, which is long overdue and very, very important. We, in partnership with Iowa State University, a team of MBA students has just generated for us a new strategic plan. It was kind of a freebie. So we got the expertise of a team of four MBA students who came in and drew up a strategic plan for us. The board is going to be reviewing and hopefully adopting that. And that will include some transition planning that we've never had in place, some policies and procedures updates that are really overdue. So that's something that the board will be working on. We're gonna kind of get all of them moving in our next couple of board meetings, and we're excited about that. And then finally, the last update, we continue to update our space. Our space is small, and as the board knows, it's perhaps not entirely adequate to our needs, but we make do. And so we've continued to do some space updates. We've done some kind of little low-budget modernization, and we also currently have cats number 5, 6, and 7 of our Animal Rescue League partnership foster office cats living in our office right now. So that's actually turned out to be a nice thing for our clients. They enjoy the homey atmosphere that we've been able to provide with those cats. So it's really all that I can tell you. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have, but I wanted you to have a little more information than maybe you've had in previous years so that you can really see all of the good work that we're doing.
Well, I appreciate in the report, the written report here, you know, it's quite extensive and so forth, so it gives us to encapsulate a lot of what's been going on. And again, we're very proud of the services that is offered and the clients that otherwise would not have legal representation on areas because of their economic situation. Legal aid has really filled a tremendous void in our community, and we want to thank you and the attorneys for all that you do.
Well, we are very proud to be doing that work.
Absolutely. Well, we're happy to have you, Tara, and your staff. You do a great job, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for the chance to come talk with you each year.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Have a great day.
Yep.
Next item is consideration of minutes from April 7th.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and second. Any corrections or additions? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions as listed.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions pass. Consent agenda. Please add utility permit 1559 and road closure 1532.
1532.
Yes, sir.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today. Additional items. Consideration of a contract between Henry M. Atkins and Son and Story County, Iowa for vote tabulation systems equipment. Auditor Lucy Martin and staff.
Thank you. I do have Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley here and Deputy Auditor Kevin Norris available for questions but also for some details. So just a little bit about our process. It's very nice that we had options. We sent out an RFP. We got three viable options. All would have worked with Story County, and we were able to consider them and make the best choice for our county. I'm very pleased that I got good input and feedback from my election workers and techs and staff. I have several election officials here in the audience today. If I can recognize them, that's Janet Stevenson, Bev Crumple, Linda Merkin, Carolyn Klaus, Ralph Ball, Drew Torsdahl, and Deb Shildroth. And I hope I didn't miss anybody. Thank you for attending and for your input. I have to thank my staff as well. They came to the demonstrations. When we are looking at election equipment, we have to make several different considerations because we are looking at building ballots, counting absentees, what goes out to the precinct, and also our accessible piece of equipment for those who have dexterity or vision or hearing problems. So we're looking at all those different aspects when we're choosing equipment, and we feel we made the best choice, which is Adkins Unison. They gave us three different funding options for payment, and I wanted Lisa to talk about that. We are paying for this out of the supplemental fund, which is we also are using to pay for lots of other things in the county, including our insurance. So we were considering our cash flow, and Henry Adkins was very willing to work with us. I should say Dustin Vanderberg and Mark Fredericks are here from the company if you have questions for them as well. So I'm going to turn it over to Lisa to talk a little bit about the cash flow and why we chose option one of the contract.
This purchase has been planned for about 4 years now. We've been putting some dollars away in the supplemental fund as they were available. It's been in the CIP as a $600,000 purchase because we were unclear as to how much it was actually going to cost, quite frankly. The supplemental fund, as you are well aware, has a lot of strains on it at the beginning of a fiscal year. First of all, our liability insurance is due all at once. So that comes out the first pay in July, claim pay in July. And with the switchover of insurance being funded from, health insurance being funded from mainly the supplemental fund in the upcoming year, that's also going to put new restrictions on that. When we put this original budget together, we estimated about a 20% ending fund balance in the supplemental fund, and I think that it's going to be closer to not 20%, lower. So when looking at what the options were to pay, I was quite hopeful that they would wait until September when taxes started coming in, and they worked with us on that. So that's where we're looking at paying, and as opposed to leasing going over a number of years, it's an outright purchase.
Outright purchase. It is roughly $80,000 less than I think we had plugged into the. I think we had plugged $600,000 in.
Right.
You talked about it, something we've been budgeting for each year for the last three.
I think we put dollars assigned dollars in there for the last three.
Last three. Right. And Lucy, can you talk for just a minute about the election equipment that has served us so well for how many years?
I think we've had that for 8 or 9 years.
So pre-iPhone, pre-iPhone. Nothing's changed technologically
right.
in the last 8 or 9 years.
For the voter at the precinct, it's going to look very similar. It's a tabulator, which is basically a scanner that reads your paper ballot. It's on a black box that looks a lot like a recycling bin. It's a little more streamlined, but that looks very similar. What looks very different is our ADA compliant piece, which will be, it has a touch screen. It fits into a voting booth. It's very user friendly. And I think our election officials will like it. And just in terms of setting up the equipment, it should be a lot more straightforward and quicker. So.
And does this help us as absentees continue to grow and become a larger share of our vote total? Does this help us with counting those absentees?
What I like about this option is we have, we're buying two scanners, and we have the option to rent additional scanners when we need to do that. I anticipate we're going to do a close to 30,000 absentee ballots in 2016. So we have, it's scalable. We can always bring in more equipment if we need to do that, and we have that cost right in front of us. Each machine does, I think, 3,000 ballots an hour. So if we had three machines running,
And just comparison, what has it been here over the last few years? As we've seen, I know that counting the absentees has been.
Currently we use the same piece of equipment that we use out of the precincts, and we were using maybe for a big election 6 of those tabulators, and then you're feeding the ballots in one by one. This one you can put in a sack and it'll run through. So I will say, yes, the price is under what we had predicted, $600,000, but we are looking at approximately additional $15,000 outside of the contract to for emergency power supplies, additional handicap booths, and really boring stuff like laptop batteries, just to bring us all up to speed. So I don't know if you had Kevin can talk to you about that in greater detail if you'd like. But just know that that is coming as a separate action item for you under the $600,000.
Talk about the type of maintenance agreement, if any, how that is factored in, and also what's the expected life span for this type of equipment, assuming no major changes in the election process is going to encompass in the next decade or two. But I'm just curious.
Right. Well, maintenance is covered in the first year under this contract, and then it's roughly $47,000 a year to maintain our equipment, which is pretty comparable across any of our options. And I would expect the machinery to last another 8 years at least. I know you had spoken last time I talked to the board, or maybe it was during the budget, about putting money aside every year, just as a matter of course, because we know this is coming. So.
Yeah, and my preference there is if we can plan on getting equipment that's going to last us for two of our national general elections, I think that's the right way to go.
Yeah.
Take the year off that we buy it from putting any additional dollars in, and then so for 6 years, be putting money in and then buy the seventh.
Right. It's not a process we want to go through any more frequently than we have to.
Right.
We are in the process of decommissioning our current equipment, and then we will have to certify and bring everything into compliance for our upcoming school election, September 8th, which is the first election we would expect to use this equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Is there value in the old equipment?
We're getting, I think, about $38,000 in change trade-in. Mm-hmm. The nice thing is they're taking everything, including the black boxes, which we weren't sure, so we don't have the pain and suffering of trying to find a home for those or stripping out the guts and recycling them, which really helps for us on staff time.
Other questions?
No.
Lucy, any additional comments?
Well, I didn't know if you had anything. I would like to thank all the people that helped us make this crucial decision.
Outstanding. We have at least one person who would like to speak. Drew Torsdahl would like to speak to the election equipment. Drew, please come on up.
Yeah, Drew is one of our election technicians. Very
No dancing,
Drew.
Got the microphone over
here. I'll hold it up close. I just want to say that I had the opportunity to attend the presentations on all three of the vendors that came in. I was impressed with the company that came in and the presentation that they give. The equipment appears to be, well, it is more compact than what we currently have and was also more compact than the other vendors that had, and which will make for easier storage. Also, just utilizing it, I think it's going to be easier for people who are not technologically advanced in that. It's very user-friendly, and I think that's important, especially with an older population that aren't used to computers and such. So I support Lucy's decision in going with this company. I think it's the right thing to do.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time and work.
All right.
I just want to thank Lucy and her staff for the hard work they've put in on this. It's a huge portion of her job duties as the auditor, and I think they do a great job of it over there. And with that, I would move approval of the contract between Henry Adkins and Story County for new vote tabulation equipment.
I'm totaling
$520,398.
I would second that motion.
Option one.
Option one.
Anything else?
Got that whole motion, Chuck? All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Only to say that, Lucy, I didn't think you needed to bring some additional support in here to kind of convince us that this was a good deal. But it was kind of nice to have some of the people that work on the election process be a part of vetting what we're doing. I think that citizen engagement involvement speaks volumes because, again, being user-friendly and to the clients that are going to be voting, I think it's going to be very important as we move forward. But thank you anyway.
Yeah, one of the beauties about the way our auditor conducts herself is I have no question at all that this was as thorough a process as you could possibly have in determining which election equipment. I bet there was plenty of feedback from multiple sources. And, Lucy, we thank you for your diligence in putting this together. Mm-hmm. Anything further?
No.
Toot, aye. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. We approve the contract between Henry M. Atkins and Son and Story County for new election equipment. Thank you very
much. Thank you, gentlemen. Great.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion and consideration of health insurance carrier plan options for non-union employees. We're going to say that a couple times as we talk. This is conversation about non-union employees. Yeah, if you go ahead and do introductions.
There we go. Sorry, the microphone wasn't on. I'm Alyssa Wignall. I'm the HR director for Story County. And with me today, I have our broker, Debbie Dean, who I've been working with to get the quotes from the other two carriers.
And if we could, while we're waiting for Ames and for Wayne and for the benefit of the audience, just a real brief synopsis of why we're sitting here. We didn't ask to sit here today and discuss this. Hopefully it is one of those things where we get lemons and make lemonade out of it. That's what we're trying to move toward. But talk through why we're here.
Okay, sure. Our current flexible benefit plan, our employees are given $575 a month. Off of that $575 comes the mandatory life, short-term, and long-term disability. So they're left with approximately $540 to $550 a month to allocate towards insurance benefits. Another option that the employees currently have, they get to take that in taxable cash if they have covered other coverage. With all the new ACA regulations, the employer mandate is now in effect in 2015. And the beginning of our plan year is July 1st, so we have to comply with that employer mandate. Part of the employer mandate says that you have to provide affordable coverage to your employees. So the employee portion cannot be more than 9.56% of their household income, their W-2 income, taxable, whatever you want to use to determine that amount. Because our employees are given the option to take that benefit in cash, that does not go towards the employer contribution towards health insurance. So if someone would look at our plan, it would look like the employee is paying 100% of their premiums, which isn't the case, but that's how, since we allow them to take it in taxable cash, none of that goes towards the employer mandate to make our insurance affordable. And starting in 2016, all of the reporting requirements are there, and we have to certify that we do provide affordable coverage to our employees. So we were faced with an issue on the beginning of this calendar year.
So let me see if I can synopsize that back to you to make sure that I fully understand exactly why we're here. Along about November, about Thanksgiving, and Debbie, I'm going to look to you as much as anybody on this. About Thanksgiving of this year, a new rule was issued on the Affordable Care Act that deemed the way we have traditionally paid for health benefits here in Story County was no longer compliant with the ACA. We found out about it. I know I found out about it the 1st of January. Alyssa, I think you found out about it at a similar time. And so we started working on this. We knew there was a possibility as of 18 months to 2 years ago that it was a possibility, but we didn't think for sure it would come down. So found out this was all happening, so we had to figure out how we could comply or be out of compliance and at risk of a fine per employee that actually filed with the Affordable Care Act. Did I say all that correctly?
No. You did.
Okay.
You did.
And so to that end, to this point, this board has looked at multiple generic options. We plugged money into the budget that would make us compliant, but we did not ever approve a specific plan or provider. We, in fact, increased the amount of dollars we put toward our employees' health benefits by about $1 million if you compare what it would have been under the old flex system to what we actually budgeted for FY16. And now we're to the point that we need to make a determination on what plans and what provider we're going to offer to our non-bargaining unit employees.
Correct.
Got it.
And so what we've done, just to give everybody a little bit of an idea, when we got this information, we started working. We have a pretty big challenge here. Currently on our health plan, we have about 56 individuals that are enrolled in that out of 310 eligible. prior years, the insurance carriers would not bid on us because we did not meet the 50% participation levels. This is the first year, because of healthcare reform, that those carriers have to provide the employer with a quote. Now, those quotes are based on participation levels. So, you know, when we went to the carriers, they gave us quotes based on 50% participation, 75% participation, all the way down to, I think, 30% participation. So we would get different quotes based on that. So it was a challenge that way. It's a challenge that they are looking at the population of what we have as employees. We do not have claims data for all of our employees.
Sure.
So, you know, when all this information is sent to underwriting to help form the premiums for our group, it's quite a challenge.
So now the lemons to lemonade part, let's talk about that for just a minute, at least the way I view it. So the way we've provided health insurance, and I'll use me as an example. My wife has phenomenal health insurance through Iowa State. I think we spend an extra $40 a month or something ludicrous in terms of how low it is in order to have me on the plan, and it's really, really good insurance. So the current way we have operated in Story County has been a huge benefit to me, because I get $540 or whatever it is in my paycheck every month to use however I see fit. That's super. But for some of our employees who don't have a spouse who works somewhere that gets great, great health insurance, Debbie, what for them to go on the market and buy a good family health plan with a reasonable deductible, what is that costing them per month?
It's significantly more than it ever used to be prior to the ACA. I can tell you that recently I've had to price some individual plans for public employees who are early retiring, just so they can compare what that would look like in the marketplace versus staying on their group plan. And I know that just a week or two ago, our individual specialist priced a $5,000 plan for a 62-year-old individual, and it was just under $700 a month for just that employee.
Just an individual.
Yeah. So it's all based on an age banding. Obviously, now today, it's less costly for a younger individual than for an older individual, but it's still significantly more, price prohibitive, and individual rates will be going up. Wellmark is going to hold a public hearing. We still are waiting on the details. If they're going up over a certain percent, they have to hold a public hearing, and they've provided information that they intend to be doing that. So it's Rick, it's a pretty big range, but it wouldn't be out of the question to say that, you know, a family of mom, dad, and two kids that are in their, with mom and dad being in their 40s, you know, that could easily be $1,600.
So $1,600 of a, and we're providing $540 of that. So we've got employees that at least on that example could be coming up with $1,000 a month out of their pocket for basic health.
Could be. There are old plans too, and they're all over the map. But
one thing too, I do want to point out with the 575 minus the mandatories, with our current renewal rates, we have two plans that our employees are. Most of our employees are enrolled in. They've got a $2,000 deductible, so they've got our highest deductible plan currently.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have quite a few people on our HMO plan, which is a restricted plan. You cannot go to the Mayo Clinic if you're on that plan. It's out of network. You have to pick your provider, and that's who you have to go to. So just looking at the renewal rates, just to give everybody an idea, on a $2,000 deductible as it stands today, with the current contribution that the county puts towards, employees are putting $83 a month towards a single plan and $872 a month towards a family plan if they elect the county coverage. The 500 HMO, they're putting $146 towards a single plan and a little over $1,000 towards a family plan. So the $550, $540, those that are taking the county insurance, it's not, the premiums are going up so much, it's not covering what it used to cover.
Yeah, so the people that are advantaged by our current system are the ones like me.
Correct.
Who are getting their insurance elsewhere at a reasonable cost.
Yep.
People who are having to either use our insurance or go find their own probably are at a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
Fair to say?
Mm-hmm.
Good. All right, so now we're to today.
Okay.
Let's talk about today.
So what we have, after a few months of working with Debbie and her working with the United Healthcare in Coventry, we do have final quotes from both companies on various plans. You'll see that as the information that I attached as the documentation for the agenda item. We quoted quite a few different plans to see how, a little bit higher copay would affect the premium, how different deductibles. And so the documents that the health insurance, where it shows the three plans per company, you'll notice that Coventry has lower deductibles. Their premiums are significantly less than United Healthcare and the current Wellmark plans. The Coventry plan has a, if you look at the explanation of what it does, we did put a copayment. Our current Wellmark plan has a 20% coinsurance. So when you go to the doctor for a normal office visit, you pay 20%. That 20% does not go towards your deductible, but it does go towards your out-of-pocket max. So on the United Healthcare and the Coventry plans, they do have $15 copays. They do not have the coinsurance. It's a $15 copay regardless of whether it's a regular office visit or it's a specialist. The $15 for a specialist is a really good benefit. 20% of a specialist visit would be more than $15, depending on who you see. We tried to quote, there's three different insurance carriers. They don't write the plans exactly the same. So what we did, we tried to get it just as close to what we possibly have on our current plan.
Okay. Debbie, thoughts on these? First of all, thank you for going and getting the quotes. I know that a couple of them weren't easy to get for the reasons that Alyssa spelled out earlier. We only have 56 employees currently taking insurance, and so it's a gamble for these insurance companies to put a bid together for us. Talk us through what you see.
It is a gamble. I mean, I'd like to be able to tell you there's the science behind their actuarial decisions, but they consider someone like Story County, even though you have a current plan and you have members enrolled in that plan, they all still consider you to be what they would technically call a virgin group. It would be similar to a large group that maybe heretofore didn't even offer group health insurance. And so that's part of the reason why these quotes are so varied. That said, we did start the process by trying to mirror the ISEC plans, and as Alyssa just indicated, it's a little bit difficult to make them exactly apples to apples, so we got them as close as we could. In looking at both United and Coventry together and trying to get those two to have as similar a benefit to one another so that we could really make a good judgment call relative to which of those two might be better, I guess our findings are that the plans themselves at Coventry are richer than they are at United. The medical and pharmacy copayments all feed to one out-of-pocket maximum, which is less than either at United or, frankly, on the ISAC plans.
Even so rather than having where I'm paying medical and I can have a maximum out-of-pocket and prescription drugs where I can have a maximum out-of-pocket, on the Coventry one, you just combine those two?
That is correct. Mm-hmm. So okay. The $500, as we looked at all of these options and tried to weigh them out financially, the pros versus the cons, the Coventry plan somewhat rises as being the richest plan, meaning it's a $500 single deductible with a $1,000 out-of-pocket single. And that includes all expenses that go toward deductible, go toward copayment, go toward pharmacy copayment. And oddly enough, that also tends to be the most price competitive plan as well.
Gut feel, Debbie, are they trying to buy the business?
Well, whenever you look at a situation like this, it would be hard for a thinking individual to say, I think they are trying to buy the business. But again, then it comes down to statistically, if that is the case, then looking at norms as to what renewal increases might look like and trying to actuarially move those out a year or 2 years, would we then be back up to a level of where we would start at with either ISAC
right.
or even United now? And in health insurance, unfortunately, in many respects, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. And we're talking about the potential for anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million difference. So it's just impossible to turn a blind eye to that type of reduction in cost.
Okay, so we talked about yesterday. We've talked about today. Let's talk about tomorrow. I'm one of those that believes that the right place for the county to be longer term, and by longer term, I'm suggesting minimum of 2 years and probably up to maybe 4 or 5 years out, depending on when we could build reserves, that the county needs to be a self-insurer and utilize one of these companies to administer the plan. But I think when you look at other like entities, that's what they've moved toward. I know that's what the city of Ames currently does. Does this help us? It just seems logical to me that if we can spend a little less, even if they are buying the business in year one and year two, it helps us start to build those reserves so that we can actually move toward a self-insurance kind of model.
I could agree more. In fact, Alyssa and I have talked about this several times. I mean, it would be wonderful if we could strategize to have a 3-year plan to move into a self-funded environment and use one of these major companies that owns their network, which would be Wellmark United or Aetna, because Coventry is now Aetna, and move to a reinsurance platform, because then you have total control over how you want to write the plan, how you want to differentiate out different parts and pieces of that plan. You can make it truly your own, and I would completely concur. And so starting here at a lesser threshold will allow you to get the claim experience that you need at a lesser cost to be able to then move to a self-funded platform, which long-term is the best strategy from a cost perspective.
Well, and a provision to the employee perspective.
Absolutely.
It gives us the flexibility to provide what we need to provide.
In every respect. Yes.
Last question for me, and then I'll open it up to Paul and Wayne. Your experience, clearly we have a baseline with Wellmark through our ISAC plan, phenomenal service that we get from them. And I guess I should state right up front, if we move on from them, it has nothing to do with the service they provided or anything through the years. It's strictly the realities of where we are in Story County today. What's your experience, Debbie, in dealing with Coventry, now Aetna, I think you said, and United Healthcare?
We have good relationships with all the carriers. And so the one thing that you need to remember in addition to the carrier is that you have a patient advocacy service through us. So what that does is that helps your members not have to be caught up in the quagmire of talking to different customer service agents at any of the various carriers. They may always contact the carrier. We would never remove that, of course, but we also are there to be their advocates. So I would like to say that part of that customer service really goes back to us and
okay.
how good of a job we do.
But you're comfortable in dealing with...
I'm comfortable in dealing with any of the major carriers in Iowa, absolutely. They have, you know, with Coventry, they have good representatives that have been there for many, many years. Same thing with United, same thing with Wellmark. We have at the agency level, we have representatives we've been dealing with for the last 15 to 20 years.
Okay.
So they're not moving around a lot.
Thank you. We'll open it to public comments in just a minute, but Paul, any questions before we do that?
No, I just want to thank Alyssa and Debbie with your expertise and all the hard work that Alyssa's put in since the first of the year on this. I know it hasn't been easy. It hasn't been an easy process for anybody. So
it has been long and lots and lots of hours spent by you guys, and lots of concern, understandable concern from our employees of where we were headed. And frankly, I know I'll speak for me, lots of sleepless nights trying to figure out how we make this work given the hand we've been dealt now. Wayne, questions or comments?
Not so much questions. I took the time to ask Alyssa quite a few questions a little bit. As you guys are aware, I'm much more familiar with the Wellmark plan that we've been on for many years due to my tenure, and also serve on the ISAC Board of Directors. And each year when, as a board, we take a look at our insurance options and plans and look at premium increases and things like this. And we recognize over this past year, due to prescription drug costs and so forth, you know, there was a big adjustment, you know, in the Wellmark plan. And my biggest question initially, also serving on IMWCA, looking with Workers' Comp Board of Trustees, when you're always out there looking at the market and looking at potential companies trying to buy for your business, you have to look very carefully at the overall package and cost-benefit analysis, because sometimes on the surface, to initially start the service, the cost is very reasonable. But over the 2 to 3 year period out, the increase could be substantial. And in my conversation with Alyssa, we try to guesstimate, I'm going to use that term, that even if there was a increase of 10% or slightly higher, we would still be below what we were currently doing right now. And so that was kind of a reassuring to me. And the other issue was taking a look at the employee surveys and other kinds of input, and looking at the offer of what we were trying to do for the family plan, as well as the improvement in the overall cost to the employees with the direction that we're going. I think it's very helpful. I would say that just for your guys' knowledge, both Alyssa and I took the time last Friday. We were on the phone with ISAC, particularly ISAC Executive Director Bill Peterson, just kind of giving him a little bit of a update that we had this on the agenda. We would probably be trying to make a determination of a provider, and he was willing to, and he did answer a few questions that Alyssa had that I was very satisfied and pleased with in us determining which direction that we might go. But I think the bottom line that I wanted to echo to you guys is the comment that was made is that ISAC does provide a service to member counties, and it's up to member counties to choose what service that they want to affiliate with, and they need to always take a look at what is ultimately in their best interest as they move forward, and that no one service is going to deter or distract from the role that ISAC basically plays. So they understood where we were and what we were taking a look at, and they also understood that their plan currently as it exists right now, due to what we call the usage utilization, is much higher and not competitive. So I just thought of a courtesy that I needed to give them a heads up regard to that, and I was just pleased that you know, they understood where we are. So I'm comfortable with where we were. To be very honest, going in a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I was probably going to not support going in a different direction. Simply because of longevity and early history, so forth. But, you know, I've, taken a different view in terms of, understanding, the whole healthcare options that are, presented to us. And from an employer point of view, it's pretty obvious that, one is much more encompassing and would be an advantage not only to our employees, but also to us as employers.
Yep.
Well, and Wayne, I understand that this has all put you in a really, really difficult spot with your years of history, with the ISAC plan through Walmart. And just know that we have really leaned on your relationships there and your expertise in dealing with some of those in order to try to come to three as comparable as possible plans. And now we've just got to make the best decision we can, however we do that. So that's the insurance piece.
Yep.
And this would be, the county would pick up a portion of the insurance, and the employee would be responsible for the monthly contribution
Correct.
Of a portion of insurance. But there, those dollars would either go toward insurance or not. So for somebody like me, either I take the insurance or I don't. It doesn't have any impact to my paycheck Correct. Other than what I would contribute. The second piece of this is life, disability, vision, and dental. Can you talk about that for just a second, and then we'll get to comments and questions.
Yep. Okay, so we have the health insurance and the employer and employee provided the contribution rates. The other portion, and we've gotten a lot of questions, is what is the county going to do? Right now we pay for mandatory life, short-term and long-term disability. Now that does come off the contribution, the flex contribution that the county gives to everyone.
So when we say $575 a month, we don't really mean 575. Nobody gets $575 a month.
No.
Right.
Nope.
Okay.
The mandatory premiums come off of that. So we get a lot of questions when any individual actually applies and collects short-term or long-term disability. The taxability of that benefit depends on whether it's an employer-provided benefit or whether the employee is paying for that after tax dollars. It is an employer-provided benefit because we allocate them. We give them $575 and we take those premiums off of that. So they're not seeing that $30 a month that goes towards that premium. So that's 100% employer provided. So I get a lot of questions when I have an employee that goes on disability. Well, why is it taxable? That's why, because it's 100% employer provided.
And we're not talking about changing that. We're
No.
talking about keeping that 100%
Absolutely.
Employer provided for life and disability.
Yes.
And that is just mandatory. So we
Yep.
put the dollars toward it
Correct.
And that sits kind of in its own pot.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Talk about vision and dental.
Employees have been able to utilize or whatever that the remainder of their flex benefit, and they can allocate that. If they don't take the health insurance, then they can allocate it towards dental insurance, vision. They take it in taxable cash, and then it kind of, you know, our employees also, you know, they can contribute to a 457. It's not part of the cafeteria 125 because it's not an allowable option underneath per IRS regulations, but they take the benefit in cash, and then they have a pre-tax deduction that goes into their 457. Same thing with their voluntary life. That's not a pre-tax reduction in their pay because that would be they're using their after-tax dollars, but it kind of supplements that.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've had a lot of people ask is what contribution, you know, are they going to pay a percentage of dental? Are they going to pay vision? You know, I used all my flex cash and provided dental for my family, provided vision for my family, and or none of it, and was able to purchase voluntary life insurance. So one of the concepts that we have previously that I've talked to you about is still allocating a certain amount of flex dollars a month for the employees to go along with the health insurance. As long as we keep the health insurance out of the flexible benefit amount, they can take that flexible benefit amount.
So
in
we
cash.
can put the vision and the dental,
mm-hmm.
but not the life and disability into that flexible benefit amount. The life and disability, since it's mandatory, we're going to hold that separate.
You can.
Okay.
If you put it in with that, it's like all lumped together, and you say our contribution is $185 and some odd cents, they're not getting $185. They're getting
$150.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other point to look at, if you completely remove the mandatories from the flexible benefit portion and just say we're paying 100%, which in reality is what we do, those premiums can be paid out of the supplemental fund because they're insurance premiums.
Which we have more flexibility in the supplemental fund if we have those dollars there. So vision and dental, I believe we budgeted as a placeholder the intention to pay full vision and dental
mm-hmm.
for all our employees, and then they can either choose to take vision and dental or they can choose to take the cash or
Correct.
Is that right? Is that
yep.
what we budgeted?
Yeah. Yep. We are going to be in the second year of a two-year rate guarantee for dental and vision. The most expensive family dental is $116.83 a month, and our family vision is $28.46. So if you lump those together, it's $145.29. If you want to allocate 100, you know, give them enough flex cash to cover 100% of those two.
And that would allow every employee to have family vision mm-hmm. and family dental, or they could
turn it down
and utilize yeah. those dollars for their contribution for something else.
Correct. And they don't have to provide, you know, with the health insurance as the flexible benefit, they had to have health insurance. For this, they don't have to have dental or vision to waive it. They're just waiving it. It's a standalone. It's a voluntary benefit. And is how our vision and dental plans are written. They're voluntary benefits. They're not tied in with our health insurance.
And Debbie, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Paul.
And if they choose not to do either of those, they can pay the payroll taxes on that $145 and take
Correct.
It in their paycheck.
Correct.
Okay. Debbie, as you deal with other clients, what we've talked about putting together here, is it a plan that's reasonable provision? To employees as an employee benefit?
For a public entity, yes. Absolutely.
Comparable?
Absolutely comparable.
Okay.
Maybe slightly better.
Okay.
There's a lot of counties that I know, I think it's Webster County, they don't even have the option to take dental or vision as a voluntary. I mean, they don't put anything towards it, but my understanding is they don't even offer it to their employees.
There's cities that fall into that. Mm-hmm. Scenario as well.
Okay. I'd ask the two of you to stay there. Debbie, we're going to need your microphone. First person to speak, and just come right up here, and we'll hand you the microphone, and you can speak as Margaret.